Thank you for downloading this episode of Just Ball Things NBA Podcast. Be sure to follow us on Facebook and give us a rating and review on iTunes. And now, on with the show.
Shut up and sit down.
This week on JBT Pod. The All-Star Weekend is almost finished, and we discuss where we stand on how it all went down. Trade deadline is upon us, and we'll be discussing the big trades that happened this week. We talk about the Raptors and where they're heading in light of their recent slump. In light of some head-scratching comments from Kyrie Irving, we'll be talking about our favourite conspiracy theories. And we'll be rating some of the members of the Banana Boat Squad in a brand new DBS. So shut up, sit down, because JBT is about to begin. Hello, hello, all you beautiful people across Australia and indeed across the world. My name is Nick Busing at JBT Real NJ, and thank you so much for downloading this episode of Just Ball Things NBA Podcast. You're listening to episode 1.18 on this Sunday, the 19th of February. And with me today, we have the J-Man J-Pod, Jack Manuel. How are we, mate?
Nick, this is take two. And you still, two. It's Monday where you are. It's Monday.
Yes, it is technically Monday. But on the plan, it says the 19th, because we planned to do it on the 19th. And it's only 2 minutes into the new day. So it is February the 19th on this Sunday. And all how right. Are you, Jack?
I'm swell, Nicholas. I'm enjoying a nice packet of crisps, as they call them over here in London town. Roasted chicken and thyme. They're quite tasty.
Good to know that you're eating chips on a radio kind of esque podcast. It's gonna turn out tremendously.
I've stopped now. It's literally just like Frank in It's Always Sunny. It was hilarious. We just kept eating those crackers.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah. You've seen it firsthand, mate, and you still continue to do it.
Bloody earth, mate. Crisps is life. How was the Gunners concert?
Yeah, for those of you who tuned in last week, I got tickets to the Guns N' Roses concert as they toured Melbourne, and it was good.
Paradise City?
Yeah, they ended on Paradise City. That was great. Obviously the big songs went off. I've never seen a stadium more packed. Full MCG. I've never been to a stadium more packed. Full MCG, so 100,000 people in the arena. It was amazing. Obviously, a section of the seats weren't covered, but there was enough people on the floor to, I think, fill those seats. It was, yeah, amazing. And Sweet Child of Mine, obviously, everyone at that concert knew that one. Amazing atmosphere. He screwed up, though. Axl Rose screwed up at the start. He announced this, like, oh, welcome, Sydney. And then everyone's just like, mate, what are you doing?
That's one thing it's like calling LA New York. Like, there's just some things you don't do.
Yeah, it's such a rivalry. And it's just, I don't know whether it was shit stirring or whether it was a joke, but the crowd definitely booed. So it wasn't taken too nicely. But that was on Valentine's Day, that concert. So, the missus was a bit, not upset, but she was happy that I managed to go to the concert. But took her out for dinner the next day. What did you end up doing for Valentine's Day, mate?
We did the fried chicken that I was speaking about last week, mate. Yes. I had chicken. Ali and I had chicken and waffles for Valentine's dinner. It was immensely tasty. It was romantic, but I don't think it was as romantic as your Valentine's card, Nicholas.
Well, you are a cute man. My Valentine's card, with the permission of my darling girlfriend, I am able to read out on the podcast today. So strap yourselves in, folks. All right. Dearest Bae.
Go.
Bae. Dearest Bae, you're a swell lass. Yeah, you're a swell lass, and I count myself a very lucky individual to have been courting you for close to 5 years now. I would skip raid nights and basketball games for you, which is a big deal. Oh, yeah, come on, that's when you know you've made it. Nah, but seriously, you go all right.
See, there are just so many fantastic uses of language there, Nicholas. Like, swell. Swell is a very underrated word. It I love swell.
It is.
How good is it?
That you could say that the word swell is indeed swell.
And also, the ending is perfect because, like, I was telling Ali, like, you know, she doesn't understand what go all right meant. And I'm like, because it doesn't really make sense. Like, if you look at it as a sentence, you go all right. What does that actually mean? But it's the highest form of flattery possible.
In Australian culture, of course.
Absolutely. If you still tell someone they go all right, then you're pretty much going to marry that person or have them as a friend for life.
Yep. Defs, mate. You go all right. I know
you go all right.
I know how you go, and it is all right.
Oh, you're cute. Speaking of cute Valentine's Day stuff, there was a big trade that happened on Valentine's Day, wasn't there?
Yeah, it was very cute, I guess.
Well, how was it cute?
Well, that's what you said, talking about cute. That was your segue.
No, but my segue was Valentine's Day, you idiot.
No, you said talking about cute things on Valentine's Day.
Yeah, but the Valentine's Day was the segue.
Mate,
because
you're done goofed, and I retract my go all right statement. You go not right. You go left.
Hashtag alternative going lefts. All right. Left, yeah. All right, NBA news with Nick Nelson and the JMN. There was a big trade that happened on Valentine's Day, which is the segue, which has shaken up the face of the Eastern Conference. It was first reported by Woj on his Twitter account. Orlando has agreed to trade Serge Ibaka to Toronto for Terrence Ross and a 2017 first-round pick. Big trade. Nick, thoughts?
Initial thoughts, like, I really like Serge Ibaka, but Orlando just got him. So were they always looking to trade him off?
No, well, I'm not sure. I know you said you're not really well versed on the contracting, but Ibaka was on an expiring contract, which means he would go into unrestricted free agency, which would have meant he would have left Orlando because he just didn't fit there alongside Aaron Gordon, Biombo, Vucevic and stuff. He just didn't fit there. Whereas Masai Ujiri, the owner of the Toronto Raptors, they've needed a power forward for a while. And Serge Ibaka, like a Millsap, who they were rumored to get as well, he is the perfect fit for the Toronto Raptors. And they have been struggling quite a bit lately. They've dropped to, I think, fourth or fifth in the standings. And you don't want to finish... You want to finish that top three so you can avoid Cleveland in the second round, assuming they finish first. But I like what they've done here, and it works out well for both parties. Yes, Orlando did give up Victor Oladipo and the rights to, I think it was Sabonis, and, like, you know, some picks for basically Serge Ibaka. But now at least they can save some face and say, look, Terrence Ross, very good rotation piece. I think he's got the potential to be a sixth man of the year. He's a great rotational piece, provides some real energy off the bench, can shoot some threes, which is what Orlando need, anyone that can shoot. And it allows Aaron Gordon to move back to his natural position at the four rather than playing as a small forward, which just doesn't suit him. So I think this works out well for both parties, but in the long run, we're going to be analysing it in how is this going to affect Toronto Raptors in the playoffs.
I mean, how, like you said, they've been needing that third person for a long time now, especially in that power forward sort of spot. Averaging 15 points a game this season, you add that to an already amazing offensive Raptors.
Yeah.
Not to mention his defense. Shoring up that key. Serge Blocker, man.
Yeah,
Blocker.
Serge Blocker. Yeah, his offense has skyrocketed this year, especially with his shooting, which will fit in seamlessly with the Raptors. But I'm sure the Raptors will be hoping he can recapture some of that OKC defensive energy, because he's been a bit lacking in that department this year. But he's definitely got the tools to provide, and he's just going to be a perfect piece in that system, because Patrick Patterson coming off the bench as a power forward is going to be perfect for them. They didn't have to give up Norman Powell, who basically is going to take Terrence Ross's place. And Norman Powell is almost an upgrade on Terrence Ross because he's got the youth on his side. So Toronto barely gave up anything in this trade. And their 2017 first-round pick, you'd assume, would be late 20s, 30s anyway. And yes, it's a stacked draft class, but a 20s, 30s pick isn't necessarily going to be a bona fide superstar anyway. It's not a top 10. So I think Toronto won out of this, but at the same time, the Orlando organization can say that they've at least saved face by getting something out of this.
Well, Orlando gets a shooter and a pick. And you can never, like you said, it's a stacked draft. You can never underestimate the flexibility, I guess, that a pick can give you. It's a first-round pick. They can use that as an asset to trade as well. They could have like ascertained that to trade it off. If they use it, which I think they should because they're kind of in a rebuild stage at the moment, they're not going to pick up a franchise player, but definitely possibly a third or second or third string player.
Yeah,
I think that'd be really, really good for the organization. Any other trade news, mate? I think there was one more.
There was another one happening at between Portland and Denver. A bit of a lesser trade, but still, it was sort of the big first trade that sort of kicked off everything, where Portland traded Mason Plumlee and a second-round pick to the Denver Nuggets for Jusuf Nurkić and a first-rounder. So that leaves with the Toronto Raptors now with three first rounders in this stacked, as we said, 2017 draft class. And Mason Plumlee, who is going to fit along as a backup nicely to Jokic, I think. They can't play together. I don't think that's going to happen. But as a backup center, I like Mason Plumlee. It's just, you know, losing that first round pick, it depends where it's going to be and who that player is going to be, and everyone's going to analyze it in hindsight. But I think at the same time, I don't understand this for Portland other than the pick, because Plumlee is as good as Nurkić and they're very similar players, and he just doesn't fit well in that system at all. I don't think Nurkić has the potential right now to be a starting center like Plumlee possibly can. I don't know. Who do you think wins out of this trade, Nick?
I think because of the sheer amount of draft picks that they've got, Portland do end up winning. Like you said, like Nurkić isn't an upgrade for Plumlee.
No,
I don't think. But you're giving them three first round picks in a loaded draft that they can now trade off to get the players that they want. Because who's, you know, look at these rebuilding teams. Who of the 76ers, like you could upgrade your center right there.
With
some first round picks, whether they take them, obviously there's some like semantics and stuff, but they're gaining, they've got all these assets that they can use.
Yeah, we were talking a little bit about this before we started the pod when we were just discussing the trades in general. The fact that Portland, they were going in the direction earlier in the season of going all in and trying to win. So they signed Crabbe, they signed CJ to all like close to max deals. And now it seems that they're close to that luxury tax line. I think they got the third highest roster in the league, if not the second, behind the Cleveland Cavaliers. And now that they realize, look, this isn't a team that can really challenge for a championship. We sort of need to get rid of some assets here and free up our roster space and clear some salary cap. So I think that what they're going to try and do is use possibly one of those picks or a second-round pick to get rid of the salary of the injured Festus Ezeli, whether someone like a Philadelphia 76ers or my Nets take on that because we are under the salary cap floor. It remains to be seen. But, you know, like you said, having those assets is a good thing. But at the same time, the Boston Celtics have had assets for quite a while. And when are they going to make that splash? It's interesting. You've got them. But at some stage, you need to use those assets and you need to cash in on them at
the
same time.
They are second in the East, mate. And Jaylen Brown was an amazing pickup for them. So, like, they are using those assets. And I think in terms of sheer trade value, Nurkić has a lot more value than Plumlee, just being 4 years younger.
Yeah, yep.
Whether the potential is there, I'm not a scout, so I'm not sure. But you couple that with a first round draft pick in a draft that is stacked, and you could get a decent player for that. You could get a better player than Mason Plumlee for that trade.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree. And I mean, we'll talk more about the trade deadline next week, recapping all the big moves, because the trade deadline is happening Thursday, 3 p.m. American time, from memory. I remember listening to one of the podcasts. So I'm sure there might be one or two moves still left, and it remains to be seen. The All-Star break will surely bring up some small moves at least. But moving on to a man who's been in the news quite a bit this week, Mr. Kyrie Irving. He is set to star in an Uncle Drew feature-length film. How cool is that going to be?
What would it be about?
Does it matter, Nick? It's Uncle Drew, mate. Young blood.
Well, an hour and a half of him like schooling people on a court. That would actually be all right.
I'd pay like double price to see that, because I know Uncle Drew is one of the best sort of. And there's been so many great NBA commercials, like Russell Westbrook does a heap of good ones. The Foot Locker commercials are insane. But Uncle Drew is like, you know, its own thing.
He's like an NBA icon, Uncle Drew.
Yeah, and it's going to be interesting to see whether they can somehow incorporate, you know, Pepsi, whether they, like, it's a Pepsi film or something like that. It's going to be interesting to see if it actually, how, or like whether it's just a YouTube film or whatever. As film lovers, it'll be interesting to see how it's made in that sense. But we'll quickly touch on Kyrie's flat earth comments and hashtag fake news, hashtag lay off the dope, Kyrie, and hashtag Omar, you love this shit. Nick, let's touch on it for 5 seconds. Is Kyrie an idiot? Is he the stupidest person in the NBA right now?
Everyone has their own beliefs, but, you know, mate, this isn't a belief. This is
it's just science.
This is, people have been up there. They're like, they didn't just
I was listening to the full podcast on the way home because I thought we'd be talking about it in the pod. And his comments, he made some really weird comments in general on the Channing Frye and Richard Jefferson podcast. By the way, guys, listen to that, because the teammates and the bands in that is almost as good as the JBT bands. But he also said that, like, you know, aliens are real. He said that, like, the plot to kill Bob Marley. And we'll be teasing more of those sort of things because we're in an off-topic that will surely be very enjoyable for us and the listeners. But Kyrie, you're an idiot. Omar, you're an idiot. The earth is round. Science, okay? And he said people are feeding us this information. It's like, who are you referring to? Like, science. Like, science is fact. Like,
this isn't
in the
like,
age of, like...
this isn't like the bloody, you know, what, 1400s, where the church was trying to, like, oppress Galileo or... Like, Jesus, Kyrie, come on!
I mean, I love Kyrie. He's a great NBA personality. You know, he's... I don't know how he got into Duke College. Shout out for Duke. And Adam Silver even had a go at him because Adam Silver went to the same college. And he's like, it doesn't represent my views.
Yeah, no.
But speaking, he made those comments a little bit before All-Star weekend. And I sat up till 3:30 a.m. last night. And Nick, it was for nothing, mate. It was for absolutely bugger all.
Yeah. I mean, recap of the weekend so far. Obviously, the All-Star game hasn't happened for us yet. Being Sunday, Monday morning, it'll happen in a few hours. But we have seen all the events and the Rising Stars Challenge and the Celebrity Game. What did you make of the Celebrity Game for starters?
The best part of the Celebrity Game was Mark Cuban wearing a number 46 on his jersey to represent the fact that Donald Trump's the 45th president and he's put 46 as a bit of bets. The best part of All-Star Weekend so far, Nick, and I'm sure you probably agree, is just the memes and the posts and the photos that have come out.
I think that might be the best part of most All-Star Weekends. I mean, it's just like the stories that come out of it, just the funny moments, because it's just a muck around. It's a muck around event. So you go out, have fun, and yeah.
Your tweet about Steph Curry and those half-court shots for Sega Strong.
That was painful to watch.
It was really bad. Man. I was like, this is really awkward right now. And we were chatting as we were watching it. Tell the people your tweet, mate, because it deserves some love.
For
it should have gone
quality,
viral.
For more quality tweets such as the following, follow me at JBTRealEndra. So my tweet was, Steph Curry had three attempts to make one shot. Warriors blew a 3-1 lead. Hashtag stay woke.
It's beautiful.
I saw others that was just like, Steph Curry blew on a $130,000 lead.
Yeah, that was the best
that
one.
That was good.
Oh, Twitter is savage, but I love it so much.
I mean, he had like 10 shots.
I know.
And missed them all. That was hard to watch.
And, you know, hashtag Sega Strong. That was a great moment. And DJ Khaled making a three-pointer. Like, DJ Khaled shot better than Steph Curry.
Steph from Rage, yeah.
That was a great moment. Reggie Miller getting all the celebrities and other NBA players involved was really nice. The dunk contest was a huge letdown.
Yeah.
Nick and I, we put a poll up. I put a poll up and he retweeted it. Who you got for the Verizon dunk contest? And the results were split. We had a 29% people voting for Aaron Gordon, who was out in the first round, surprisingly. That injury might have had something to say with that. Jonjo Jordan had 29% of the vote. 28% of the vote went to Derrick Jones Jr., who was my pick. But the under-the-radar pick, Glenn Robinson III, got 14% of the vote, and he took it out. Our Twitter people need to get a bit more woke, mate.
get a bit more woke. I think that was a bit of a surprise, though. I mean, Derrick Jones Jr. came in as the underdog, easily being the D-League player, and being pumped up by the starters as well. So he had sort of like a low-key fan base. DeAndre Jordan, we've seen his stuff in games, and Aaron Gordon from last year. But, you know, Glenn Robinson III, he's got the genes for it. That's the thing. Like, his dad was a two-time dunk champion, and he was on the panel. I mean, if that's not like a conflict of interest, then I don't know what is.
Yeah, look, out of the entire night, there were three good dunks. It wasn't worth staying up for. You know, YouTube it to get the highlights, guys. But you know, you didn't miss much. The skills challenge was kind of fun.
The skills challenge was a little bit underwhelming, I thought.
There was 40 seconds of action that was spanned out into like half an hour with about a million ads in between.
Yeah,
like, it was
I don't like the bullshit between all the... Like, that's one thing I don't like about basketball. Because there are times when you've got a lot of stoppages, timeouts, quarter times and all that, and all those breaks. And they've just got the cheerleaders, the entertainment,
all the filler
stuff.
Yeah.
I don't like it. I agree, all the bullshit in between the events at All-Star Weekend, and it like kind of stems from that in the game.
Yeah,
I don't know. It's such an American thing.
It is, and that's what part of the reason why we love and hate them. But speaking of All-Stars, we put up an earlier poll in the week, which got a bit of traction, which I was surprised at, but I was quite happy with. This was before we found out who Kevin Love's injury replacement was at the All-Star Weekend, chosen by Adam Silver. We had Bradley as picks in our poll. We had Bradley Beal, Carmelo Anthony, Kristaps Porzingis, and then another, like, you know, maybe a Miami Heat player. 32% voted for your boy, Real Deal Beal.
Yeah,
27% voted for the now replacement, Carmelo Anthony. 18% voted for the unicorn, and we had 23% for the other. Our fans were, my Twitter followers or whoever voted on this thing, I agree with that Bradley Beal should have got the vote.
Yeah, I mean, I would have put Kristaps before Carmelo, but Carmelo's a popular figure with all the, I think a lot of it has to do with all the you know, grief, I guess, he's gotten over the past 3 months or so, probably even longer.
Yeah.
Probably since the start of the season. Yeah, so he gets that sort of, like, maybe a sympathy vote.
He deserves it. He's been in his
show
last
support.
10 games.
Yeah. I mean, he's been playing well.
Yeah.
But I feel that these other two players are more deserving.
Even Goran Dragic or a Hassan Whiteside as well. But the best thing about Melo being back is that, like, LeBron at the All-Star practice I saw on Twitter, he's like, I'm not the oldest anymore. And he was singing at it as Mello was getting interviewed by like Krista Bledlow. And he kept going up to him and giving you, and he's like, I'm 3 months older than you, Bron. And I'm just like, yeah, but it was funny. You know, get the banana boat squad in there. Why not?
I feel it's more like
over Mello maybe.
What's the word I'm looking for? Like more of a spectacle if you have Anthony in there other than...
That's true.
Because it's at the end of the day, this is an exhibition game for entertainment.
Yeah.
I mean, it'll go on to his All-Star as being, oh yeah, 6-time, 7-time All-Star. Which, you know, I won't go into that because that's a whole kettle
that,
of fish.
I know.
But yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, they're trying to make money. It's a business. Their business is entertainment, and having Mello there will be more entertaining. At the end of the day,
good point, mate.
Good
point.
Unfortunate as it is for the likes of my boy Beal.
Unfortunately, mate, it's a raw deal for Bradley Beal.
There we go. There was a pun in there somewhere.
That,
we got there.
That was not. Yeah, I know. Well, we can work on. Quickly touching on. Earlier in the week, I'm sure everyone's kept up to date with the Charles Oakley news that Frank Isola reported that Commissioner Adam Silver and Michael Jordan himself have stepped in to help resolve the heated Oakley-Dolan saga via a conference call, and the NBA released a statement. All isn't well because Oakley hasn't really accepted the apology. Dolan trotted out some like ex-Knicks alumni as well. It almost is like throwing it in the face of Charles Oakley. The Knicks are a mess. Dolan is a mess. Get rid of Dolan. Get rid of Phil. Bring back Charles Oakley. Make him the owner. Enough said.
Yeah, mate. Sounds good.
And with that, we're going to head to a break. And right after it, we've got the Team of the Week, DP of the Week, and Game of the Week.
You're listening to JBT Podcast. Make sure you give us a like on Facebook.
Welcome back to JBT Podcast. Jack, as always, we'll kick off here with some discussion points. Points of discussion, that's what they are.
Well done, Nicholas.
Thank you.
I try.
Jack, what I'd love to talk to you about is what has been your biggest surprise story of this year? Because there's been a few. It's been an unconventional year. Whether it be, you know, good or bad, mostly bad, with the whole New York incident that we're not going to go into. So, Jack, what's your biggest surprise story of this year?
Well, there's been a lot, Nicholas. The success of the Philadelphia 76ers becoming relevant again on the back of Joel Embiid has won. Miami Heat's huge winning streak was something that was really fun. But I'm going to focus on one player here, and he is a former Net, so it pains me to say this. My surprise story of the year has been the success of Yogi Ferrell, who is now with the Dallas Mavericks and has been absolutely balling and got himself a 2-year deal off the back of a 10-dayer. It doesn't give me... I don't have sour grapes about it at all because he didn't perform well with us. And I mean, we've got different players in that position like Dinwiddie. But I love seeing these come-up stories. Like, you know, Jonathan Simmons earlier in the year, Yogi Ferrell now with the Dallas Mavericks. He's probably the best guard anyway. Like, you know, Deron Williams, JJ Barea, all those players are injury-prone and old. Yogi Ferrell's got some youth on his side. The guy can score, so # Team Yogi Bear, get around him.
I mean, I agree with you, mate. Like, this guy, I had no idea who this guy was, as guilty as that sounds. But, you know, shooting 42% from the field and 40 from three for the year, 10 points a game for someone who the Brooklyn Nets turned down. Like, the Brooklyn Nets turned down.
Shut up.
Yes. The Nets.
Nick, shut up.
Turned him down.
Nick, shut up.
Like, your confidence can't be sky high if the Nets turn you down.
that's a fair point.
I mean, and now he's getting work done in this Mavericks team. So, yeah, good on him. It's a very good success story. You can probably guess what my one is, mate.
No, but let me, before you go on to yours, what we all know is going to be.
But very valid.
One, Yogi, shut up. Yogi is smarter than the average bear. And also, if you combine Yogi Bear and Will Ferrell, you get Yogi Ferrell. So you do yours. That was stupid. Go.
God damn. You worked really hard for that. And it was just...
I did.
It was painful.
I did. It was a... If you have a soundboard right now, I need the wah, wah, wah.
I'm getting there. Slow process, but it will happen eventually. So my success story, obviously, is the Washington Wizards. And for very, very good reason. I mean, our month of February went 6-1. Obviously, February is still going. But 6-1, only lost to the Cavs. 12-4 in January. I mean, if the season had started in January, we would be second. Second, Jack. Overall. We would be first in the East. Second in the entire grand scheme of things. Only second to the Warriors, who went 12-2 in January.
Well, yeah, the Warriors are a different entity altogether. But I like what the Wizards are doing there because it makes the East, I know, a bit more interesting. It's not just the LeBron conference anymore. I think the Celtics probably still slightly above them in terms of favorites of getting into those finals. But they've got the star power and the legitimate, like, when it comes down to playoffs, you guys don't have depth. But you don't need depth in the playoffs. You need your 7-8 players that can ball. Morris has been balling. Gortat's been killing it. Beal's been killing it. And it has been a surprise. So that's why, you know, I didn't say you couldn't do this as a surprise story. It was legitimate. And it is legitimate. I just hope, I'd really like a Cavs-Wizards season, a series at some point in the playoffs, whether it's the finals or the second round. Because that shit was entertaining. And I don't know, Wall going up against LeBron, Beal and J.R. Smith and Kyrie. And the Wizards have this really weird faux sort of cockiness about them. Like, they haven't done anything, but like John Wall thinks he's the best in the world. Bradley Beal, they think they're the best backcourt in the world. They like dress in all black for like Boston Celtics games. I like what, as the character of this team.
Confidence, mate. Confidence. We had like a massive shift early in the season going 6-11 at the start. And it was really dismal at the start. That's for sure. I mean, I had, you know, bad, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? Like repressed memories, I guess, from last season going quite poorly and only just scraping 500 towards the end of the season. But, you know, credit to Scott Brooks. Turned it all the way around, listening to an interview with him, was it Zach Lowe?
Zach Lowe.
Yeah, and it's just the way he thinks, the way he, you know, moves this team, motivates this team and motivates point guards, him being one himself and obviously creating what Russell Westbrook is, today. There were some nice comparisons between Wall and Westbrook in their style of play in this podcast, so you should definitely check it out. But it was just so interesting listening to how he has shifted the mentality, I guess, and really gotten this second unit to play, because that's been key for our victories. Our second unit started really badly. Jason Smith couldn't have hit a shot to save his freaking life. Trey Burke was shooting poorly. Marcus Thornton. But these guys, especially Jason Smith, I've been very impressed with him. Over the past month or 2 months, have really shown their stuff. And everything that the experts were saying at the start or the preseason of us really strengthening our bench seems to have all come through. So it's looking up.
It's a
great success story.
It is. And we'll move on because if we could and you could, we'd do a whole body podcast about your bloody Wizards.
Of course.
But speaking of Eastern Conference teams, the Toronto Raptors have been on an opposite trajectory to what your Wizards have been. A team who was seen as a legitimate contender to the Cavs only a few weeks ago has now dropped right off. I ask you this, Nick. Does Serge Ibaka change their fortunes and bring them back into contention?
I think they had to do something, especially in the current climate that they're in terms of... I've got their record up here. They're 3-5 in February and 8-9 in January. Previously going 10-5 and 10-4 in the two previous months. So obviously quite a severe drop-off. I don't know whether it's, some sort of mental hangover. Obviously DeRozan started the season absolutely killing it. MVP form with his usage rate and PER was off. It was off the charts. It was record-breaking. Obviously, that wasn't going to sustain throughout the whole season, but this Raptors side is a very, very good side. But something is wrong, and I feel that this Serge Ibaka, not necessarily a panic buy because they have needed a power forward, but they were forced to do something given their current record. If that makes sense.
I agree. In the immediate future, in terms of this year, I think it makes all the difference. And I think that All-Star break probably came at a good time for a team like the Raptors, so they can sort of regroup. But it's coming into the season after 2018, 2019, where they're going to have to pay all these guys. They're going to have to pay Jonas Valanciunas, Serge Ibaka. And I don't think Toronto are going to be one of those teams that want to be a luxury team. So... it's going to be interesting to see. They're going to have to probably move some assets if they want to keep Serge and sort of maintain this big three of Kyle, DeMar, and Serge. I agree. I reckon it wasn't a panic buy. It was just something that they've been meaning to do for the past 2 years. And I like this move. I think Serge is going to fit in perfectly, as we mentioned earlier. And if this doesn't work, then, who knows? They might... Peter right off but I've maintained faith in someone, a team being run by Kyle Lowry. He's got all the maturity in the world, and I think it spells for some good things. They need to get back into that top four, take over at least Atlanta's spot. But Nick, we've got a bit of a mini DP of the week here. We might include it on most weeks because it's called the J-Man's Pot of the Week. I listen to a lot of NBA podcasts. You know that.
Because
I can't watch a lot of basketball due to the horrific time difference in London, I listen to a lot of podcasts. So I'm going to be picking out my favorite episodes that I listen to on a weekly basis. You mentioned Zach Lowe's episode with Scott Brooks was an amazing episode. Like you mentioned, his basketball philosophy, his coaching methods are all fantastic, and his history, his family. It's a really interesting episode. If you haven't subscribed to Zach Lowe's podcast, I highly recommend it. It's the second or third best podcast in the podcast game behind JBT. And also another great one was Adrian Wojnarowski's interview with Dwayne Wade. Very insightful, very reflective of Dwayne Wade. Love Dwayne. Love his Snapchat. I just love his philosophy and his humility you mentioned as well when we were chatting about it after you listened to the podcast. D-Wade's a baller, and utmost respect for him, him and the Banana Boat squad. But yeah, Woj and Zach Lowe producing some fire podcasts this week, and I'll be coming up with a couple more, one or two more next week.
Yeah, sounds good, mate. Now, I like the... I listen to a lot of podcasts as well, as you do. It's very... very good source of information. If you're not on JBT, which you obviously are because you're listening to this, stay on it.
good idea.
Yeah, it's the best idea I've had. So that was a great discussion point, mate. I look forward to hearing more recommendations in the future. One last piece before we get to a break. There was an article that I believe it was SB Nation posted.
Washington Post,
sorry. Oh, yes, I see that here. an article posted by Washington Post arguing in support of becoming bandwagon teams. So, Jack, I mean, there's all this bad stigma about becoming a bandwagon supporter for a bandwagon team. agree, disagree. I mean, we're both on non-bandwagon teams, that's for sure.
I feel like we're the furthest from bandwagon teams in the NBA. It can come.
Yeah. I mean, the amount of people I know, Adrian Fantomato
would certainly argue with you about the fact that you are a bandwagon supporter in terms of the Bulldogs.
Yeah, I can see why it would look like that. I understand where Fantomato is coming from. But I didn't believe in Essendon anymore was more the point. Like they I wasn't proud.
Whatever it takes.
I wasn't proud.
Hashtag whatever it takes, mate. Whatever it
takes. Hashtag run away from Herd. Fuck standby Herd. Just run away.
Hashtag too soon. The bandwagon argument is an interesting debate and a really good debate for a podcast or for pub discussion in general, because it lies in the essence of fandom in general when it comes to sport. Like, whatever sport it is, whether it's soccer / football, Aussie rules, basketball, whatever it is, bandwagon fans are often seen as lesser fans because they jump on the coattails of a successful team, i.e. the Warriors, a Manchester United, a Chelsea, a Hawthorn football club. But the author of this article argued in support of it in the sense that becoming a fan of such teams is a lot more joyful and provides a lot more pleasure as a follower of sport and of these sports than being, say, a die-hard supporter like me and yourself when it comes to our basketball team.
Mm.
But I argue against it in the sense that because I've been a die-hard Geelong supporter, Aussie rules supporter, since I was born, basically. And some people might think I've jumped on the bandwagon, but no, I've been a supporter since I was a kid. My dad has been a supporter, my dad's dad. And he saw the first ever premiership when he was 44 years old. I saw the first ever premiership for Geelong when I was 17 years old. And that euphoria of the build-up was just so amazing, and the connection I felt, and the same could be said for people like you and Heiser and Chaz and stuff. I saw the Snapchat that the boy sent to me when that final siren went, and I saw the tears running from Heiser's face and the pure emotion that it comes from. You know, you put your heart and soul into a team. Mm. And that's why I argue against bandwagon supporting, because it for me, it's not what sport is about. It takes away from the passion of sport, and the allegiance is somewhat defines us in a way. Like, I define a big part of me is sport, and you obviously as well. We love all our sport, especially our basketball and our footy and our soccer. And I mean, you know, you're a Manchester City supporter. How did you even become a Manchester City supporter, by the way?
Well, that's the thing. Like, I support Manchester City. I support the Washington Wizards, who are now good. And I support the Western Bulldogs, who are premiers, you know? So yeah. I can understand how the Western Bulldogs looks like a bandwagon, but I've always had that kind of alignment, I guess, with the Western Bulldogs.
Well, yeah,
I might be trying to make excuses, but I don't feel that I am. I've always, like, my whole family goes for the Western Bulldogs. I've watched more, even when I was going for Essendon, I watched more Bulldogs than I did Essendon. I followed Bulldogs more closely than I did Essendon. I just jumped on the Essendon bandwagon when I was young, because that's what kids do.
Right.
And then as I grew older, I'm just like, I don't really like Essendon. But I always had that sort of Bulldogs love. So it looks really bad. And I understand, like, people can think whatever the hell they want to think. I don't care.
They can get out.
But Manchester City was a legitimate mistake. I phrased that wrong. I legitimately thought my dad went for Manchester City. So I was just like,
who does he go for?
He goes for Newcastle. It's like complete opposite sides of the freaking
You and
country.
Kieran would be a lot closer of friends if you went
I mean, I'd be a lot more depressed, that's for sure. going for Newcastle. But I for some reason I had conjured in my head to go for City, and I think it started back in FIFA 03, because I didn't want to play as Manchester United, because I got told that Manchester United were the Collingwood of the Premier League. So it's like, oh yeah, they're successful. Yeah. No one likes them. You go for them and no one will like you. I'm like, oh well, I don't want to, you know, 12-year-old me or however old I was. It's like, I want to be liked.
Yeah.
So I started playing as Manchester City. And I liked the light blue kits back in the day. From that point, from 2003, I was technically a Manchester City supporter, but I didn't really follow Premier League. I only started following Premier League fully after the 2010 World Cup because a good mate of mine made me watch the World Cup and was teaching me about all these players and the clubs they played for and how club football was 10 times better than international football. And then I started watching club football and I got real into it and I was just like, yeah, I support Manchester City. And he looks at me and says, are you serious? Because they just got bought out. They've bought like Robinho and company and all of these great players. And we were looking to break through into the top four. That looks bad as well, but I've been a Manchester City supporter since 2003.
Timing, Nicholas. Very coincidental.
Yeah, I know, it is. And now the Washington... I specifically chose the Washington Wizards because they came last in the conference the year I decided to go for them. And their name was the Wizards. But
yeah.
Going back, I got a bit sidetracked there. Hold on. Going back, when you were saying, it's like, I feel that the support needs to come from somewhere deep. So in terms of like a bandwagon supporter, it doesn't quite fit. So people who just pick a team, I've got a lot of friends, mate. Another friend of mine started.
I'm not your friend, Nicholas.
Another friend. I've got more than you, mate. He was following the Golden State Warriors because he loved Curry. Yeah, he was. But he wasn't really into the NBA, so he was kind of like trialing teams, I guess. And
I did.
Like he's older, so you know, Golden State Warriors didn't fit for him because he's older. He can acknowledge that. Like it needs to come from somewhere more important and more substantial than success. Yeah. So you have to like the team. You have to like the organization, the direction in which they're going, like their attitude. There's a lot that goes into liking a team.
I agree, and I think we'll do a little bit more on this before we head to a break. There's a difference between being a follower and a fan. Mm. I think that's a big discrepancy that needs to be told. And how I came to fruition in terms of going for the Brooklyn Nets, Chaz and I were in America, and we were sort of deciding, like, our love for the NBA was growing. I'd always loved LeBron James, so I'd always just basically been a LeBron follower, similar to your friend with Curry. So I always like, you know, Miami and Cleveland, but I wanted my team to come from, like you were saying, a more important place. So I could actually dedicate my time and energy to them. And you know, we were traveling around and New York is my favorite place in the world. Everyone knows that. And Jay-Z had bought the team, their color scheme was black and white. So I decided to be like, you know what? Stuff it. I'm going to jump on this bandwagon. Plus, well, not necessarily because we were never a good team, so it wasn't really a bandwagon jump on. Mm. Like, you know, the Knicks own New York. So I'm New York, and I love Brooklyn. And Brook Lopez was, you know, a similar player that I grew to love as well. And Chaz was tossing it between the LA Clippers and the Chicago Bulls. And, you know, he fell in love with Derrick Rose and it went from there. And I mean, you know, the allegiance, I remember arguing with a person a while ago, like, he's like, why am I a bandwagoner about, like, you know, the Nets or something when they got Joe Johnson and stuff? And I'm like, you're the original bandwagoner because you go for the Chicago Bulls because of Michael Jordan. And it shut him down completely. Mm. So it's definitely an interesting discussion to have, and it's quite a fiery topic. But we're going to head to a break. No game of the week this week because no games were good enough for JBT.
There weren't many. JBT team.
No, there weren't. There weren't. And who knows? Maybe the All-Star game might be up there. Yeah. We'll be back with JB Team of the Week.
You're listening to JBT Podcast. You can follow me on Twitter at @TheJManJBT.
Welcome back to JBT Podcast. As always, we'll start off with JB Team Starters. That's the new name that I just changed without Jack's permission.
Fine,
so that's what it is now. For those of you who are new to the podcast, this is where we pick a fantasy basketball team for the week just gone. Easy as that. One position per player for their individual performances.
One player per position, Nick.
Yep. And vice versa. One position per player. Oh, actually, no, that wouldn't quite work. Anyway, English is not good me at. we'll start with point guard. Oh, God. Oh, I'm in fine form tonight. We'll start with point guard. Russell Westbrook with another JB team appearance, leading his OKC to victory over the Knicks, racking up a very, very hefty triple-double, 38 points, 14 rebounds, 12 assists in 37 minutes, shooting 60% from both the field and three. And that was most impressive for me. I mean, his shooting hasn't been very efficient this year, but that was extremely efficient. So good for you, Russ. At the shooting guard, at the two spot, we've got Klay Thompson with 35 points, 12 of 18 field goal percentage, pretty standard for Big Klay, as he romped the Kings in an impressive fourth quarter performance from the Warriors. I think they scored 42 points or something in that fourth quarter. Something crazy. You want to take the front court, as usual?
Got it. In a win over the Denver Nuggets, Andrew Wiggins had his second 40-point performance of the week to go along with 4 rebounds, 2 assists, and a couple of steals as well. At the powerful position, a man who is just filling up that box score, the Joker, or as Reggie Miller called him last night, Djokovic. The Joker, Nikola Jokic. Did you hear that?
No, I didn't. I didn't.
I was right on it, and I tweeted at it, and SB Nation tweeted. He called him Djokovic. I'm like, that's not his name.
What are you doing?
But yeah, Nikola Jokic had a historic night against the Warriors, putting in a triple-double with 17 points, 21 rebounds, and 12 assists. That performance made him the only 10th player since 1983 to post 2 triple-doubles before the end of his age 21 season, joining the likes of LeBron James, Giannis, CP3, among many others. And at the center position, my boy Brolo makes his way into the JB Team of the Week with an impressive offensive and defensive deflate in our loss against the Bucks, with 34 points of 6 of 10 from 3 and a massive, monstrous 8 blocks. Good stuff, Brolo.
Good stuff there from Brolo. Amazing. So we'll move on with our stat of the week. And so we got two this week. Some good stats coming out this week. Kyle Korver. Kyle Korver's shooting percentages in Cleveland since he's been there. On all jumpers, he's shooting 51.4%, which is amazing in itself. His catch and shoots at 52.1%. Guarded, he's 50%. And unguarded, he's 54%. And off a Dribble J, 51.9%. So all his everything above 50%, he doesn't have a weak spot.
No.
What is happening?
Cleveland Cavaliers are just, he's fire emoji. So he's one of the best three-point shooters in the game, and LeBron James and the Cleveland Cavaliers are lucky to have him. Our second stat of the week is via Ethan Strauss off his Twitter page. Via ESPN Stats and Info, the third quarter of the Warriors game was one of their games earlier in the week, was their 16th 40-point quarter this season. No other team in the NBA has more than 6. They have 16 40-point quarters.
We knew this was going to happen at the start of the year as well. Like, this super team is going to come in and just fuck shit up. They've done exactly that. It's crazy. Some of these offensive...
No surprises.
Offensive displays. But start of the week, some nice ones. Kyle Korver's ones impressed me the most. We knew this... These aren't surprising, really. I mean, we knew that Golden State were going to be breaking crazy records and Kyle Korver was going to get all the shots he needed at Cleveland. But something that is a bit off-topic is our off-topic section. That was a bad segue. I'm sorry. I can do better. No, I can't. Off topic section for this week. Hashtag GRT if you've got any ideas for the random off topic. We'd love to hear your suggestions on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, however you social media. We're on it.
Nick's on Tinder as well.
What? only if you made an account.
I should make you a fake Tinder account. Or you should get Chelsea to make you a fake. That'd be hilarious.
Yeah, well, you make me a Tinder account, I'll make you a Grindr account.
Hey!
Yeah.
I like male androgynous.
No discrimination here at JBT.
Not at all.
Anyway, Jack, where are we going with this off topic?
All right, in light of Kyrie Irving's ridiculously stupid and false statements, we're going to do an off topic on conspiracy theories, Nicholas. We should have like the X-Files theme music play there. So, Nick, I know you've written down a few of yours. I've got a few of mine.
Mm-hmm.
Let's kick it off with your ones, mate. What do you got for me?
Well, I've got a few in-depth ones. So I'll start with, a few light ones. And the US definitely made 9/11 happen.
Like, you watch too much South Park.
Mate, jet fuel does not melt steel beams.
I hate your face. I hate you so much. Watch the South Park episode and it's just like, you know, the 9/11 conspiracy is the 9/11 conspiracy. Like, the conspiracy theory is the conspiracy. Like, that the fact that the government invented the conspiracy theory, not just the 9/11 actual event that happened, was the conspiracy. Now, for those people that don't understand, just go out and watch the South Park episode. And then at the end of the episode, Stan just comes out and says, because they're just like, what the hell? Like, who did 9/11 then? And then Stan's just like, well, I don't know, just a bunch of pissed off Muslims. And it's like, that's what it was, Nick. It was Osama and those guys flying the planes. Don't get started on me with this shit. Like, I have arguments with, like, my cousin, and Chaz thinks the moon landing. Just move on, mate. Jet fuel, I hate you. I hate you, Nick.
Well, don't get me started on the moon landing.
Oh, God!
There are reflections that don't match. Shadows. The flag was waving. There's no wind in space.
Charlie thinks that Stanley Kubrick created it. It was a film. And I'm just like, oh my God. And for those that can't see me right now, I'm rubbing my eyes profusely because of the stupidity of my brother and his best friend.
But a few light ones to kick us off. You know, I think there was... the peanut butter conspiracy with that American Dad did, or made up, I guess.
Oh yeah.
That was a good episode, and two, that was a good theory.
Like, yeah, very believable.
Like, that was, yeah.
Very believable.
Yeah.
Da Vinci as believable as the moon landing being fake.
Exactly. See, now you're catching on. Anyway, I've got a few more in-depth ones, or would you like to take the reins for a bit?
Well, I got one here. Nick, what are your thoughts on Tupac and Elvis? Alive or dead?
Well, they were found dead, so they're dead.
Well, what about Vegas, mate? And Elvis is dead. Tupac's been seen a million times I'm sure if you scour Reddit and stuff that, you know, Tupac is still alive and well, and, you know, Biggie wasn't the one that killed him. He wasn't really shot. Hashtag Team Tupac. Team right, West well, Coast.
Where is your evidence, mate?
There is no evidence at all, Nicholas. Like, with your stupid evidence for the bloody moon landing is basically.
Hey, I gave evidence. The flag was waving in the footage.
That is stupid evidence. Well, that is dumb evidence. Like, that is alternative facts at its highest level. Hashtag fake news.
Who's being ignorant now, mate? Who's being ignorant now?
All right, Donald Trump. Calm down.
What, is that all you got for me? Tupac's alive and so is Elvis.
Well, what about, do you reckon Bob Marley was assassinated?
Where are you pulling these from?
Kyrie Irving said this as well on the podcast. I'm not joking. He thinks Bob Marley was assassinated. He thinks that aliens are real. He also thinks that JFK had two shooters and it was planned all along. So my stupidity isn't... This isn't coming from me. This is coming from a legitimate NBA basketballer who has been to a highly prestigious college, clearly just for his basketball skills. Like, come on. JFK was shot. We know he was shot. Bob Marley died. Like, he wasn't assassinated. Martin Luther King died. He also said Martin Luther King was assassinated. Like, idiot. And Tupac and Elvis are dead. Like, Elvis was found on his toilet with a fucking peanut butter and jelly sandwich. He's dead.
That's how it's you want to go. That's the life. That's the dream, mate.
Well, you'll probably die, like, from cheese poisoning or something.
Cheese, yeah. It's always going to be
but
cheese.
But, yeah, those... What about the Illuminati? Are you an Illuminati believer, Nicholas?
I feel it's very believable, but then on the opposite side, it's not believable in the least. Like, you could see, like, some elitist, like, rich guys secretly calling the shots, like the Stonecutters. I mean...
That's exactly what I was going to say. Yeah, I believe more in the Stonecutters.
I mean, like, you can see an organization like that becoming a reality. Definitely. Well, how much power they'd have? I mean, it depends who's on the panel. I mean, you know, this ain't no Bush League.
Beyonce's apparently on it. Lady Gaga's apparently on it. And LeBron James and LeBron.
Well, then they've got no hope.
I don't know.
But I'm gonna get into two of mine. And it's one of them I heard from one of my university lecturers. I don't know why I was speaking about it, but it makes you think. And I'll start off with a little bit of background. In American corporate law, even Australian corporate law, there is a law against creating a monopoly on a certain market. So if you accumulate a certain percentage of the market share, you have to kind of dissolve and split into two separate companies, two different entities, to keep what's called it's called the competition law. In the United States, it's called the antitrust law. So I'll read it from scratch. The United States antitrust law is a collection of federal and state government laws that regulates the conduct and organization of business corporations, generally to promote fair competition to the benefit of consumers. Okay, so essentially what I just said. Now, in the personal computing, I think the actual market is the global computing platform. Microsoft, in 2009, Microsoft held a 70% of 70% of the global computing platform market share. Now, what does this indicate? Well, they haven't dissolved, have they, Jack? They still hold a fair chunk of that. They hold a monopoly over the personal computing market. It started
to... Is it more than 50%? Is that when you have to dissolve?
I'm not exactly sure what the percentage is, and there might be some sort of loophole in law, because I'm not a bloody lawyer. I'm just trying to remember what my university lecturer said. And he was saying that Microsoft aren't forced to dissolve because they're selling secrets to the government. That's the theory. They're able to keep a massive portion of their monopoly over this market because they're leaking information to the government through every single Windows PC in the world.
That's stupid.
And it's an interesting theory, because the reason why this could explain the reason why they've managed to fight off this kind of this competition law. I mean, this was a few years back, but I don't necessarily believe it, but it's an interesting theory that if you wanted to read more on, because there are sites around that have investigated.
I don't understand though, in that sense, in terms of privacy stuff, in terms of Microsoft computers, I doubt that computers, you know more than me, wouldn't it be more the sites like Facebook, Twitter, Google, and you're using your Microsoft computer, your Acer, your MacBook or whatever, your Apple computer, wouldn't it be the sites themselves? And like, we know that like every time that we open up Facebook, looks somewhat weird, and like, you know, whenever you're using location services, you're being tracked somewhat. It's just how we choose to view, you know, the whole privacy laws and everything in that sense. But I don't agree with that's dumb. See, a lot of these conspiracy things come out with like just pure idiocy and like just for the sake of being alternative.
But you know, like, mind blown like, if it's real. Like, holy shit.
Well, like, one thing I can somewhat believe in is the fact that there may be extraterrestrial life.
The chances, the sheer mathematics behind that is just, of course there's extra life out there.
But, like, the Area 51 thing,
that's a little bit more sus. But, like, the chances are that there is a world out of billions of galaxies, that there is a world out there fit enough to house life. Like, the chances are pretty great of that happening. Like, we were one in a billion? No, of course not.
We need to somehow broadcast JBT to the universe, see if someone can jump on the JBT bandwagon from the galaxy Plonar.
We'll have to, I'll just give the Hubble telescope, just give him a ring, and we'll see if we can, you know, beam our JBT to the Andromeda system. No dramas there.
Get around it, mate. Get around it. And let's end with a couple of mini ones that we would research on.
All right. Mini one? This is kind of a big one, I reckon.
Oh, well, we can just, like, rather than discussing them, just recite them.
All right. So this one's called the Mandela Theory. And it's a pretty popular one, so you might have already heard it. And essentially it started, like, when Mandela died, a lot of people thought that he had died when he went to prison quite a long time ago. And this discrepancy was, it was quite split. A lot of people thought he had died prior, like when they heard he had died, a lot of people, like not the majority, but a vast amount of people thinking that he had died long before. So this theory essentially states that some things that the general masses remember never actually happened. So the theory is that someone is time traveling. As ludicrous as this sounds, someone is time traveling, and because of this time travel, slightly changing the past, slightly changing our present, our reality.
We'll do a time travel thing maybe next week. But if you could time travel, is this literally what your purpose is to do? To slightly tweak.
Well, you're not intentionally slightly tweaking. You're going back, just say, like for a holiday or something. But your sheer presence is enough to change the slightest, the butterfly effect. It's the slightest change, like 20,000 years ago, could make, you know, extreme differences in the present that we are in. So common things of this, such as, you know, it probably is just a case of misremembering, but these examples will make you think. For example, famous movie phrases such as life is like a box of chocolates and Luke, I am your father. Those phrases were never actually said in the films. You watch back the films and they never actually say them. Life was like a box of chocolates is the quote from the film. Yet everyone recites it as life is like a box of chocolates. So a lot of people remember it that way. Because in one reality, it's life is, and one reality, it's life was. That's
and
the theory.
Luke, and Darth Vader never said, Luke, I am your father.
Yeah,
he just says, I am your father. Yeah.
You know, things like the Looney Tunes or the Looney Tunes, T-U-N-E-S, as opposed to T-O-O-N-S. But a lot of people growing up would be like, oh, I always thought it was Looney Tunes. So, you know, time travel and it changed. Sex in the City versus Sex and the City. I, to this day, still don't know what it is.
It's Sex and the City, but, like, it should be Sex in the City because they're having a lot of sex in the city because this, or maybe, I don't know, actually, you could argue for the fact that they are having a lot of sex, but they're doing a lot of other things in the city of New York.
Exactly. So sex and the city, yeah.
I don't care. It's I prefer Entourage.
Amen, amen. But more than likely, it's things that, you know, you just became unnoticed. Like, there's no hyphen in Kit Kat. So it's you always thought there was a hyphen in Kit Kat. So it just makes you think, like, oh, yeah, when did that change? Well, maybe it never changed, but your reality is augmented. It's, yeah. Anyway, yeah, we have talked about half an hour about other things other than basketball in a basketball podcast. I love these off topics. But we will get to a break, and we will come back with our famous DBS and social media section. You're listening to JBT Podcast. Be sure to give us a rating on iTunes. Welcome back to JBT Podcast. Social media section here, and it was a busy weekend for social media so far with the All-Star game. We've had a few posts about about some NBA kicks. So very nice work from Adrian Fumato there, posting the Dante Exum, his shoes online with some Essendon fandom there. So we all know that Adrian Fumato is a very avid Essendon supporter. So good to show some support there from Dante Exum for the Australian sports. But we've got some other shoes, mate.
Dang.
Yeah, they're pretty nice as well. Like, they're real custom. There was a lot of Australian references on those shoes. I can't remember exactly what was on there. Like, I think the Melbourne Star is on there. Other Melbourne icons. You can have a look at them, 360 views of these shoes. And they are really cool. Obviously, the Essendon Bombers on there as well, amongst other things. And, you know, Dante Exum wasn't alone, mate. We had some...
There were lots of others.
Yeah, other kicks there. Kristaps Porzingis had some Latvian and... What? New York. Yeah, New York custom Adidas shoes there. Sort of same color scheme as Dante's with red and white.
I liked it.
But, yeah, like, I love the All-Star... Time it comes out with all these swaggy sort of kicks, because we had some more, mate. Do you want to take us through some others?
Yeah, Devin Booker had some dank as hell Nike All-Star, nice simple black and white sort of main part of the shoe, but then there's almost like a camo like black and white pattern around, and these have all come from Bleacher Report's Kicks Twitter. Definitely follow those guys. They've got some mad ones. One that isn't on our Google Doc, but I recommend seeing, is the kicks that Kyrie Irving wore during the three-point contest. Pure red. They are slick as hell. But, of course, it wouldn't be complete without Swaggy P's. Dank as hell. This is via the NBA Snapchat. Basically, it looks like there's writing on it. There's, like, stars, there's like "Oh my God" written on it. There's clouds and everything. They're pretty cool. They're just plain white shoes with like some sort of sketching on it. I'm not sure if they're homemade or, and then of course Swaggy is written on it. But you know, they're pretty dank. But for the shoes of the week, it's definitely going to be Glenn Robinson III. His fire is hell stance shoes. They're like glowing in the dark and rainbowy.
They had like those hippie colors. Oh, it was great. Amazing shoes.
They were dank as hell. I wish I could have a pair.
Cost you an arm and a leg for those ones, but yeah, no, I would definitely love to own them. Even the Swaggy shoes, like, he literally looks like he's gone over his shoe with a marker and just drawn. Yeah. Just like, it looks like a like a middle schooler's diary. There's just like random stars and lightning bolts, clouds and phrases.
I love it.
All over. Yeah, it looks great. It's very creative. And expect nothing less from Swaggy P.
True that.
But yeah, good stuff there, Adrian. Nice posting on the page there. Got us investigating some kicks. I'm very happy that we did so. Move on to our DBS this week. So for those of you who are new to the podcast, here's how it works. We've been given three basketball players, both past and present. and we have to decide who we drop, bench, and start. It's that simple. So this week, we've got the Banana Boat Squad. So who you got out of D-Wade, Carmelo Anthony, and CP3?
Well, we've got LeBron James is in the Banana Boat Squad as well, but we all know where he would
be. I feel, that'd be a little bit one-sided.
Exactly. So that's why we had these three from the Banana Boat Squad. So I am benching Melo. I'm going to start CP3, and I'm going to drop Dwayne Wade.
Now, there's a bit of contention there, mate.
Yeah, I was initially going to bench Dwayne Wade, just due to the fact of his career and the fact that he's got some rings and such. But I don't know. I like
some rings, mate. Right now, some. He's got four.
He's got two. He's got two.
He won one by himself, and he won like another two with LeBron, or three.
Oh, sorry, he's got three.
Yeah.
I just prefer right now. Melo is a much better player than Dwayne Wade, and CP3 is the best player out of these three. So, hence why I would start him. Plus, he's a point guard. So he would run my team perfectly. So, I think you'd be silly not to start CP3.
Well, do we have some differences?
You're silly.
And as you know, as good bants this is, I'd say you'd be crazy. Like, fair enough. CP3 is probably the best current player. He is the best current player out of these three. He is still in fine form. Doesn't look like he's dropping off at all. Dwayne Wade this year hasn't been at his best. Let's just say that. Improved his 3-point shot.
He's 35 years old.
He is 35 years old. So, you know, it's hard. And, you know, considering his best was, NBA champion best, it's hard to, that's what I mean. Like, his best was absolutely, it was better than these three, better than the other two.
I would dispute that with CP3. But I base this purely off the fact of right now and not all three players at their best. Because in that sense, I would have done the same thing as you and dropped Melo and had D-Wade coming off the bench.
Yeah, fair enough. Fair enough. But I'm not going 100% off that. I'm starting Dwayne Wade simply because of his experience. He knows how to win you championships. You want someone like that leading your team. You do. He's a three times all defensive player, and I love my defense. 12-time All Star. Like, he's got a few more years on Chris Paul and Carmelo Anthony. Carmelo Anthony shouldn't have even been in the All-Star game this year. But a 12-time All-Star, he is 100% Hall of Famer, as are probably the other two. But, you know, three championships, mate. That's that's not easy. And he did the first one without LeBron. Like, he knows how to carry a team. He knows how to lead. He's a brilliant player. Brilliant player.
Pretty sure didn't he have Shaquille O'Neal in that team?
Yeah, I do believe so. But you know, you don't win championships by yourself. You need to have some backup there. Even LeBron in Cleveland had Kyrie and Love.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
Anyway, benching CP3 because I still want him on my team. He's still an amazing player. Best pure point guard in the league at the moment. Great assist numbers, obviously injured right now. But, you know, 17.5 points a game, almost 10 assists a game, and that's, you know, I love assists. Create some space for your team and create some buckets. And I don't rate Melo this season. It's as simple as that. He's averaging the most points out of these three, but there's just something about him on the court.
Fair enough.
Fair enough. It's hard. If you watch him play, you know, his percentage is 44, but when he misses, it's a stab every time.
He's the best shooter out of this list. Easily.
Yes, yes, definitely. I think it might be just the news surrounding him and the hostility of New York. But when you watch a New York game and he misses, and he goes on runs when he misses, and his runs when he misses are a lot more obvious than his runs when he hits. And yeah, so it makes him look like a bad shooter when, you know, in reality, it might not be. But yeah, at the end of the day, he's not better than either Dwayne Wade and CP3. And that's just, you know, what I think. I'd so much rather Dwayne Wade in my team than Carmelo.
Well, yeah, based off personality possibly, but based off someone who is a better player, Melo, I think it's proven. Like, he's an all-star this year. Dwayne Wade was almost an all-star based off fan vote, but his game has certainly tapered off in the past years due to time. But Melo in his
due to not being the number one person in Chicago. Melo is still that number one person in New York, which is, you know, crazy to me. But he is still getting the ball in his hands a lot.
Dwayne Wade hasn't been number one for a long time. He wasn't number one in Miami. He was number two to LeBron. He was, you know, an equal number one with Shaq. He's led teams before. But Melo leads his team. I'm just basing it on pure game. And, you know, in terms of this year, Dwayne Wade's having a much better season. Not Dwayne Wade, Carmelo Anthony. But we agree to disagree, Nicholas. And I should let you go so you can get some sleep, mate.
Yeah, it's a little bit late here. So I'll give you guys the spiel as always. Thank you so much for downloading this episode of Just Ball Things NBA podcast. You can find us on iTunes or any decent pod center, and remember to rate and review the show. You'll get a shout out on the show when you do, because it'll help other people find us and help add to the conversation. If you want to get in contact with the show, you can hit us up on Twitter at JBT Podcast or using the hashtag JBT Pod. You can get in contact. You can get in touch with us personally, which is what we use more often than our JBT one. Personally on Twitter at JBT Real NJ, that's myself, and the J-Man is at the J-Man JBT. You can reach us on Facebook, which we do check very often, facebook.com/JBT Podcast, or Instagram at JBT Pod, and also through email at JBTPodcast@gmail.com. So remember, it's you guys that make this show great. So we appreciate any and every post heading our way. Good stuff, Stalios and Adrian posting on our page this week. So until next week.
Keep balling, superstars.